Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Reata Update on Kidney Function Data, the LARIAT Study conference call. A PDF version of the presentation is available now on the webcast and on Reata's website at reatapharma.com in the Investor News section, where an audio recording of today's webcast will also be available shortly after the call today. Before the company proceeds with its remarks, please note the forward-looking statement disclosure in the company's press release. The company will be making forward-looking statements on today's call. There are many factors that could cause results to differ from expectations, including those noted in the company's SEC filings. Today's statements are not guarantees of future outcomes. Please also note that any comments made on today's call speak only as of today, February 13, 2018, and may no longer be accurate at the time of any webcast replay or transcript rereading. Following the prepared remarks, we will open the call for questions. We ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up so that we can accommodate as many questions as possible. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. I would like to introduce your host for today's conference, Vinny Jindal, Vice President of Strategy. You may begin.
Thank you. Hello and welcome to Reata's management call to discuss the kidney function results of the Phase 2 LARIAT study of bardoxolone in patients with pulmonary hypertension, or PAH. I'm joined today by Reata's Chief Executive Officer, Warren Huff, and Chief Medical Officer, Colin Meyer, who will review the data and take questions following our prepared remarks. I'll now turn the call over to Warren.
Thanks, Vinny. As many of you know, we have observed that bardoxolone produces unprecedented improvements in estimated GFR in virtually every clinical setting in which the drug has been tested. Also, there is now a large body of preclinical data in over 40 published manuscripts demonstrating that bardoxolone reduces glomerular inflammation, restores the kidney's filtration surface area, and prevents chronic remodeling and fibrosis in most of the well-validated animal models of CKD, including models of diabetic nephropathy, protein overload, hyperfiltration, and lupus nephritis. Importantly, our partner, Kaiwahako Kirin, released data last year from the Tsubaki trial definitively establishing that the observed improvements in estimated GFR were real improvements in renal function as measured by the gold standard inulin clearance method of measuring GFR. To demonstrate that the novel anti-inflammatory mechanism of real kidney function improvements observed with BARD will translate into long-term reduction in kidney failure events, we have conducted a number of long-term clinical trials. We recently published data from clinical trials of bardoxolone in patients with diabetic CKD, BEAM and BEACON, demonstrating that estimated GFR improvements from bardoxolone treatment were durable for at least 1 year, and that bardoxolone significantly reduced by more than 50% estimated GFR decline and ESRD events validated to predict kidney failure. Most important, these data demonstrated that patients treated with bardoxolone for at least 1 year had a persisting improvement in kidney function versus placebo, even after the drug was withdrawn for 1 month. This persisting increase after withdrawal suggests that the drug is improving, not harming, the structure of the kidney in humans as it does in multiple animal models of CKD. Importantly, the FDA has agreed that this persisting benefit analysis after 1 and 2 years of treatment may support approval of bardoxolone in patients with Alport syndrome. To add to this body of evidence that bardoxolone treatment will translate into long-term improvements in CKD outcomes, we recently examined the kidney function improvements experienced by our PAH patients in our long-term follow-on study in those patients called LARIAT. As Colin will review in more detail, patients with PAH on average experience declines in estimated GFR, and declines in kidney function are associated with a significantly greater risk for hospitalization and death. Our analysis demonstrated that PAH patients treated with bardoxolone experienced kidney function improvements that were durable for 2 years and not associated with adverse outcomes. The 2-year duration of sustained eGFR improvement in LARIAT is twice as long as we have previously reported for bardoxolone and supports the rationale for our ongoing CARDINAL and PHOENIX programs in rare forms of CKD that include polycystic kidney disease, IgA nephropathy, FSGS, CKD caused by type 1 diabetes, and of course, Alport syndrome. With that, I'll turn the call over to Colin to review the Lariat data and address a few related topics on bardoxolone's mechanism of action in CKD.
Thanks, Warren. Many of you may not know that CKD, or progressive loss of kidney function, even in patients with normal kidney function, is a key contributor to several pathophysiologic processes in PH, which amplify its adverse effects. Poor kidney function results in excessive fluid buildup, which puts more strain on the heart, causing loss of function over time. This results in less perfusion of tissues, such as the kidney, which further exacerbates its function. This process is often referred to as cardiorenal syndrome. Several recently published PH studies demonstrate increased mortality with progressive loss of kidney function. Of note, the most recent analysis was published last November, and it analyzed data from the REVEAL registry, which is the largest PH registry, and it demonstrates that a 10% loss of kidney function in 1 year is associated with a 66% increased risk of death. It's also associated with a significantly increased risk of death or all-cause hospitalization. Notably, these findings are independent of baseline EGFR, six-minute walk, and WHO functional class, which are other standard clinical parameters that also predict outcomes. And so these data show that changes in kidney function independently predict bad outcomes in PH patients. The Lariat trial is a two-part phase two trial that enrolled patients with pulmonary hypertension. It included a 16-week placebo-controlled phase, and this included both dose ranging and titration cohorts. After the initial 16 weeks of treatment on bardoxolone or placebo, all patients were given the opportunity to be provided bardoxolone and follow longer term in an open label extension phase of the trial. Analyses in this presentation include all PH patients enrolled in Lariat across dose ranging and titration cohorts for a total of 101 patients. 71 of those patients received bardoxolone during the 16-week placebo-controlled phase, and 30 patients initially received placebo and then were given bardoxolone and followed during the extension phase. As you can see in the table, Lariat patients had impaired kidney function upon study entry, which is common for this patient population. During the 16-week placebo-controlled phase of the trial, bardoxolone improved estimated GFR 10.6 mL per minute versus placebo, and these results were highly significant statistically. Bard-treated patients were significantly improved from baseline, and placebo patients were numerically down. Notably, PH patients lose kidney function very quickly. Based on the observed data from Lariat, and the estimated rate of loss of kidney function, it's similar to what's been observed in trials that are published in the literature, which is consistent with a loss that's much faster than observed in diabetic CKD patients. As you can see in the waterfall plot, which includes one bar for every patient, bardoxolone in blue, placebo in white, there's a very high proportion of bardoxolone patients who responded during the 16-week treatment period. As I mentioned, after the 16-week placebo control period, placebo patients in Lariat were converted to bardoxolone and followed in a longer-term extension trial. Patients included in the analysis on this slide were those treated for at least 1 year, and there were 56 of these patients. Despite the expected rate of loss of kidney function in this patient population of several mL per minute per year, patients in Lariat on bardoxolone demonstrated durable increases from week 16 to 56 to 104. At 2 years, the magnitude remained large, and the treatment effect was very significant in this very fragile patient population that is highly sensitive to any adverse effects on renal or cardiac function. These data show sustained increases in kidney function for double the duration we had previously reported in diabetic CKD patients. As you can see on this slide, which shows a waterfall plot of all patients who were out at 2 years, most patients, 88% of which, had an improvement in estimated GFR at 2 years versus baseline. From a safety perspective, a formal safety monitoring committee met regularly to review unblinded safety data. Across all 101 PH patients, the median duration of treatment was 66 weeks. There were no deaths in any of these patients, and there were no safety concerns raised by the safety monitoring committee. In informal comparisons, patients in Lariat had a reduced rate of hospitalization and death compared to recent PH outcomes trials, as well as the REVEAL registry, which, as I mentioned, is the largest PH registry. These data suggest that improvements in kidney function are not associated with adverse long-term outcomes. In summary, these data show durability of improvements in kidney function for 2 years, which is the longest duration tested to date. This is the same duration of treatment in our ongoing phase 3 trial of bardoxolone and Alport syndrome. Importantly, these analyses differentiate the improvements in kidney function with bardoxolone from agents that cause hyperfiltration and may modestly, transiently, and adversely increase kidney function by increasing blood pressure in the kidney. These data support our ongoing Cardinal and Phoenix trials and rare forms of CKD, including Alport syndrome, polycystic kidney disease, IgA nephropathy, and type 1 diabetic CKD.
And Glenda, with that, we'll open up the call to questions, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the star, then the number one key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. To prevent any background noise, we ask you to please place your line on mute once your question has been stated. And our first question comes from the line of Maury Raycroft from Jefferies. Your line is now open.
Hey, good morning, and congrats on the update. First question is if you can comment on the baseline kidney function for these patients in Lariat. Was the kidney function more impaired in a subset of patients, and were there any observations pertaining to proteinuria?
Yeah, hi, Maury. It's Colin. So from proteinuria, you know, we did not collect proteinuria like we do in our CKD trials. These patients typically do not have proteinuria upon study entry. And so we would not have expected proteinuria to change, you know, in these patients since it wasn't present in the first place. And as far as the eGFR range, the average was, you know, about 73 to 75 mil per minute, which is stage 2 CKD. So many of the patients, you know, had CKD per the formal definition, which is a GFR of less than 90 for more than 3 months, independent of cause. Importantly, and as I mentioned in the start of the presentation, even normal kidney function is important in these patients because if they have a loss of 10%, even in the normal range, that is associated with an increased risk of death and hospitalizations. And so we saw an improvement over the range of kidney function that was studied, you know, in the Lariat trial.
Got it. That's helpful. And for the patients, so it looks like Lariat's now fully enrolled, and I'm wondering if you can comment on the overall baseline characteristics and if there are patients or and on anemia or low hemoglobin in these patients too and how that could play into the PH-ILD readout that's expected.
Yeah, these analyses were really focused on the kidney effects in PH patients, not so much the PH-ILD. But we saw improvements in patients kind of independent of changes in, you know, hemoglobin or baseline hemoglobin, which we've reported previously.
Okay. And then the last question is just on, just to clarify, if you guys did a retained benefit analysis in this study.
No. In this study, patients who were on bardoxolone during the 16-week treatment period were maintained on bardoxolone immediately into the extension trial, and then placebo patients were converted at week 16 to active drug, and so there's no retained benefit analysis in this trial.
Got it. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Joseph Schwartz from Leerink Partners. Your line is now open.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the question. First of all, I know that you said that there were some informal comparisons showing a reduced rate of hospitalization and death compared to some other comparative studies. Could you talk about that a little bit more? Do you plan to present this in some more detail And then were the events that were seen, were they in patients that benefited less on the kidney aspects of disease? If you could address that would be very interesting. Thanks.
Sure, and so the comparisons that we made were between the Lariat trial and three of the most recent pivotal outcomes trials with other pH agents. And so the trials with selexipag, macitentan, and then the Ambition trial with tadalafil and ambrisentan. And we can't make formal comparisons because we didn't formally, you know, match patients statistically for all the baseline characteristics and to make sure the patients were similar. The point of the analysis was just to make sure that there was no apparent increase in risk of adverse outcomes. As I mentioned during the presentation, it's extremely important to understand that these patients are very fragile. These patients are actually a lot more fragile than stage 4 diabetic CKD patients that we studied in the Beacon trial. Quoting a nephrology colleague who's a division chief at one of the major U.S. medical institutions, an extra ounce of fluid in these PH patients, would cause serious adverse effects. And so we wanted to try to differentiate the profile from what you would expect if baroxolone had an adverse effect on hemodynamics and kidney function, which is really the central issue that we're trying to address with these data. Are the effects novel and consistent with all the preclinical and clinical data demonstrating that the drug suppresses inflammation in the kidney and durably increases kidney function in a non-damaging manner? Or does the drug increase blood pressure in the kidney? And that, and is that the mechanism for increased kidney function, which would not be durable long-term and would cause adverse effects? And so through this and all the other data that Warren described, we think the profile fairly clearly shows that the effect is novel. It's not adverse. And so if we were to see increases in important hospitalization events or mortality, we'd expect that would be associated with this other mechanism. But since we did not see that, it further supports our hypothesis that these effects are durable and are not due to, quote, hyperfiltration.
So were I know you said that there were a lower rate of hospitalization and death than you would expect via these comparisons, but were the fewer number of deaths and hospitalizations, were they in patients whose GFR did not go up as much or maybe went down? Because I know on slide 5 you do show that there were some people that in blue that did go down. Were those also the patients that had the adverse events?
It's unclear. We can't really draw any formal conclusions because that beyond 16 weeks was not placebo controlled, and these patients have a progressive and deadly disease. If you look in the literature, the rate of loss of kidney function and two of the other trials has been reported 8 to 13 mil per minute annually. And so even though a patient may not have had an improvement from baseline, even a small loss could be a meaningful difference versus what you'd expect for a patient who is not treated with the drug. And so there were actually very few events, and so there weren't just lower rates of death. There was no death in any PH patient, and the rates of hospitalization were very low. And so this data will be presented at an upcoming medical meeting. But since the events are actually very few, it's hard to really know, if they were, due to a patient, not, quote, responding, on drug.
Okay, that's super helpful. Thanks. And then did you do any 6-minute walk tests amongst these patients, or do you have any idea how that might translate from improved eGFR?
So we previously reported the 6-minute walk distance data in the placebo control portion at two different data releases. And so once again, this is uncontrolled. And I think the kidney function data show that the effects of the drug, specifically on kidney function, are durable through 2 years.
But as we previously reported, there were mean improvements in kidney function or in a 6-minute walk.
Right. I recall. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Adam Walsh from Stifel. Your line is now open.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. The number one question we get asked by clients is regarding the potential for hyperfiltration, which I think, Colin, you've addressed fairly well here. But I just want you to frame it up in terms of kind of the background here with the ASK trial. I believe in that trial there was about a 2 milliliter per minute improvement in eGFR that peaked at about 6 months and a subsequent hyperfiltration injury that led to adverse renal outcomes. In this trial, yeah. it looks like you've shown about a 10 mil per minute or five times the improvement in eGFR. Should that produce five times the damage if it were a hyperfiltration mechanism by which the drug was working? Or how can you frame this up for us to help us address the hyperfiltration injury relative to the ASK trial? Thank you.
It's a great question, Adam. And so I think to frame this question, I think it's important to understand that up until now, the interventions that nephrologists have had to treat kidney function have only affected hemodynamics or blood flow. And they do this by affecting pressure, blood pressure in the kidney itself, or by affecting blood pressure systemically, which is transmitted to the kidney. And so previously, agents that protected the kidney reduced blood pressure in the kidney. Agents that increased kidney function increased blood pressure in the kidney. And yes, as you mentioned, there's a single precedent of a therapeutic class previously that's been shown to increase kidney function through increased blood pressure. And this drug in this class is called amlodipine, and it was studied in the ASK trial. It was a hypertensive study in African Americans. And so I'll walk you through the data in a second, but just to further to frame this, we've heard this question for some time. Could the mechanism of action of bardoxolone be due to hyperfiltration? And so because of this, we've been careful to characterize the effects of the drug preclinically. And as Warren mentioned, there are over 40 recent peer-reviewed publications from academic labs in the literature. Almost all of these, notably, were published after we stopped the Beacon trial. And so I've come to appreciate that almost all nephrologists are unfamiliar with the large body of evidence that we now have, both preclinically and clinically, that differentiates the effects from hyperfiltration. And so, notably, in three different models of hyperfiltration preclinically, we've shown that bardoxolone preserves kidney function and reduces fibrosis. And so from our perspective, we've addressed this preclinically. Clinically, as I mentioned, the precedent is the ASK trial. I've had in the past 3 months an advisory board meeting with multiple nephrologists and additional one-on-one calls with nephrologists, most of which were from major academic institutions. I've spoken to approximately 40 in the past 3 months, and they are generally all aware of the ASK trial and point to it, as the most important trial that shows that hyperfiltration from increased blood pressure is bad in people. What most nephrologists forget is that you can see injury and loss of kidney function in the ASK trial within 1 year. Many nephrologists will say that you need long-term data to determine if hyperfiltration is bad. As you can see in the right panel of this figure, this is GFR for amlodipine in the ASK trial for patients had GFRs of less than 40, and so similar to the Beacon population, which is shown in blue. And as you mentioned, as you can see, the increase in this patient population with amlodipine was only 2 mil per minute from a baseline of just under 40. And so this 5% increase in kidney function, which was 2 mil per minute, was sufficiently damaging so that by 1 year, these patients had loss of kidney function versus baseline. And you are exactly right. If bardoxolone's mechanism of action of increasing kidney function was by increasing pressure, in the Beacon trial, the relative increase was about 33%, and so 5 to 6-fold greater. And you surely would have been able to detect damage in these patients. But instead, the effect was durable through a year. And as Warren mentioned, in this trial, the Beacon trial and the Beam trial, after withdrawal of drug, after 1 year of treatment, we saw significant increase versus placebo. that also helps to rule out injury and suggest disease-modifying activity.
Yeah, and baseline.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's above baseline and placebo. And so similar questions, you know, we've received about how do you explain the mechanism of proteinuria, and is this just indicative of hyperfiltration? And so as you can see on the left, this is also red amlodipine in the ASC trial, blue for bardoxolone in the Beacon trial. In the ASC trial, amlodipine did increase proteinuria. You can see the percent increase was about 60% at week 24, and that is out of proportion to the increase in GFR. So the increase in GFR was about 5%. Increase in proteinuria was 60%. Whereas with bardoxolone, the increase in proteinuria was less. And importantly, in some upcoming analyses that we're submitting to a journal imminently, you know, we've been able to demonstrate that, number one, the increase in proteinuria is simply due to the increase in GFR. And number two, the increase can be accounted for by the changes in GFR statistically. And so the increase would be expected. The magnitude is explained by GFR. And then, as you can see, most people are unfamiliar with the curve in Beacon, and that proteinuria actually trends back down towards baseline, unlike in the ASC trial with amlodipine, which it was sustained, and at further time points went up. And just to address this a little bit more in the following slide here, and so these data come from this manuscript, which is being submitted imminently. If you look on the bottom left of this slide here, so this overlays absolute changes in proteinuria, which is the black line denoted by the y-axis on the left, versus changes in estimated GFR from Beacon, the blue line with absolute values on the y-axis on the right. And you can see that they both go up acutely. This, once again, you know, per the laws of physics, proteinuria has to go up. If filtration goes up, the kidney is filtering more protein. Then we've been able to show that it's stable, and then while GFR is sustained, proteinuria comes back down, which suggests that the drug may be improving the integrity of the filtration barrier.
System would retain benefit.
Just a quick follow-up to that.
Sure.
In terms of the pieces of the puzzle that the average nephrologist needs to understand to be comfortable with the mechanism for bardoxolone, the data that you're presenting today, I think you have 26 patients out to 2 years. How powerful a piece of the puzzle is this going to be in terms of getting nephrologists to understand that there's no hyperfiltration here? And then just kind of as a part of that question, you mentioned that you've been doing quite a bit of outreach to key opinion leaders. How is that going? What has the response been in terms of understanding this mechanism and accepting it in the broader nephrology community? Thank you.
You're welcome. So if we go back to the prior slide, this slide showing comparing ASC and Beacon has been the most convincing slide that I show. As you know, we can talk about mechanism, you know, for extended periods of time based upon all of our robust data, but simply showing the eGFR and proteinuria changes for the ASC trial with amlodipine versus the Beacon trial with bardoxolone convinces almost all people in and of itself. And that's because you can see loss of kidney function due to hyperfiltration in 1 year. We've already shown it's durable for a year. And notably, even though the N is 26 at 2 years in PH patients and is not as large as the Beacon trial, those patients are extremely fragile and sensitive to any adverse hemodynamic effects. And so to the KOLs involved in the program, those data have been highly compelling and support that the effect, you know, is not adverse and that it is durable and not hyperfiltration. And so as far as the outreach in general, it's been helpful because as we've been scaling up our medical affairs and MSL field force, we've been trying to understand, you know, what the current view is of the nephrology community about bardoxolone, and it's become clear that most people stopped following our program when we stopped the Beacon trial back in 2012, and so there was a general lack of awareness about our data. But as we've made progress reaching out to these and all these individuals, it has become clear that the data we have, you know, are convincing. And so our efforts right now are to, number one, continue to you know, increase the visibility of this information by having our MSL team interact with KOLs in the U.S. and globally. And number two, to continue to publish and vet all of our primarily clinical data in the literature and at major medical meetings. As Warren mentioned, you know, we recently published additional analyses from the Beacon trial demonstrating that there is reduced progression of CKD using newly validated outcomes measures, and so that data has been highly impactful. There will also be, as I mentioned, several additional papers that address these key topics like proteinuria that will be coming out over the next few months. And so,
Thank you.
Successful. You're welcome.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Yigal Nochomovitz from Citigroup. Your line is now open. Yigal Nochomovitz, your line is now open.
Oh, hey, sorry, I was on mute. Thanks for taking the question. So, you know, obviously there's a pretty intense debate, not only amongst the investor community, but also in the academic setting with respect to the pros and cons of bardoxolone on kidney function. And as you know, there was recently a set of letters submitted to Jason with opposing views. You know, given that debate, you know, with respect to this particular study, I guess I was wondering, you know, Colin, as you mentioned that you didn't collect the proteinuria at baseline and you wouldn't expect to see proteinuria at baseline in this patient population, would it not be helpful to, you know, take a look at that now and just sort of check the box that either you don't see it at all, which would be obviously very, very supportive, or if you did see it, it would be consistent with the estimates that you would expect based on the correlation of improving eGFR and proteinuria, but not beyond that. So I'd like to get your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Sure. And so as I mentioned, you know, we did not measure the sensitive method of quantitating proteinuria, and so it's a first morning void is used in our CKD trials to measure the albumin to creatinine ratio. We did measure spot urines, which can detect negative, trace, 1-plus, or 2-plus proteinuria, and did not see any meaningful differences. So if the patients did have proteinuria, we would expect it to go up, as I mentioned. And so this slide, I'll go back to, helps address that. And so and I think an analysis which has been really impactful to the KOLs in our program, who are authors on the proteinuria paper, that, as I mentioned, is about to be submitted, as shown on the right, in this table. And so these are data from the Beacon trial where we did a quartile analysis of change of proteinuria at 12 weeks. And so you can see the percent change, and then there's absolute baseline levels in absolute week 12. And the whole question of proteinuria is, do increases in proteinuria predict loss of kidney function longer term? And so in this data, using one-year data from the Beacon trial, we show that there's no difference in kidney function, so estimated GFR, at week 48 or post-withdrawal doing the retained benefit analysis in the lowest and highest quartiles. And so clinically, you know, this data basically clearly shows that we can separate, you know, this link between proteinuria and change in kidney function longer term. And of course, in the Beacon trial, these patients did have proteinuria. And so once again, you know, this data, you know, has been highly convincing to the nephrologists. And as you mentioned, the two editorials that were recently published, I think if anyone is to read both of them, they can see that one set of authors, you know, is unaware of all the data that are in the literature, and so they reference that the mechanism of action isn't known, versus the other author cites multiple papers that, you know, that clearly have, you know, characterized the effects of the drug. And so, yes, there's a debate, but from our perspective, it's primarily because all this information is not yet known. And so we think it's great for the program that there's increased visibility because the data that we do have, you know, by and large, address these issues. We clearly need additional longer-term data. But as far as the mechanism, is it hyperfiltration or not, that's already been shown preclinically not to be the case, and the clinical profile is very distinct.
And this table that you're highlighting, this was discussed with your 40 calls with nephrologists in helping convince them of the issues?
Yes, this was discussed with most of them.
It's
a more recent analysis that we've conducted in the past couple of months, and so not all 40 have seen it, but a lot of them have. But it's to directly address what happens when patients have increases in proteinuria on bardoxolone. Does it affect, you know, kidney function change, you know, at 1 year? And once again, in the ASK trial, acute increases in proteinuria observed by 6 weeks, I'm sorry, by 6 months, were associated with loss of kidney function at 1 year. And so in the same exact time frame of the ASK trial, we see that, you know, increases in proteinuria are not associated with loss of kidney function with bardoxolone.
For the DSMB for the catalyst the Cardinal trial, how much checking is there of these issues with respect to protein levels and things like that? Is that being done on a consistent basis in the catalyst study and in the Cardinal study rather?
Yeah, in the Cardinal trial of Alport syndrome, proteinuria is measured frequently, and so, you know, any increases that are, you know, much larger than we've reported here and that would result in values that are in the, quote, nephrotic range, you know, would not be good. And so what we've seen is a profile that's different than that. We see modest increases, modest to moderate increases that plateau and level off and then tend to trend back down over time. And so the Data Monitoring Committee, you know, is looking for, you know, any changes that are different than the profile that we've characterized before. They have, you know, full access to all data, not just proteinuria data, kidney function data, adverse events, serious adverse events, et cetera. And so if they had, you know, any, you know, concerns, they would communicate them, you know, to us.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Matt Kaplan from Ladenburg Thalmann. Your line is now open.
Hi, Callan. Thanks. Thanks for the detail on the hyperfiltration and the proteinuria. That's very helpful. Want to talk about or ask you about kind of some near-term events, shifting gears a little bit in terms of data, upcoming data that we're expecting in the near term in terms of the PH-ILD and the mitochondrial myopathies. How should we think about this upcoming data and what are our expectations? And then secondly, I guess, kind of read through from this data, the phase 2 data especially, that you've just announced in CTD, PH4, the upcoming, catalyst study as well.
Right. So to address those questions, and so this really is, you know, completely separate from the PH-ILD patients, and so that study, which is a subset of Lariat, is focused on patients who have interstitial lung disease, and we're looking for improvements in 6-minute walk distance in those patients. And so we're looking for, you know, a signal of 6-minute walk distance improvements. And so this, you know, these data on kidney function are completely separate from that. As far as, you know, read-through for the CATALYST trial, once again, this is focused on a different endpoint, kidney function, you know, over 2 years. We've already shown increases in 6-minute walk distance in the Lariat patients, the PH patients, for 16 weeks versus placebo in a couple of different data releases. And as you know, the CATALYST trial is only 8 weeks longer than the 16-week placebo-controlled portion of the Lariat trial. The most important reason why we're discussing this data is because we do think it reads through to our CKD programs. And so we think it has direct relevance to the ongoing Alport syndrome pivotal trial, as well as the PHOENIX trial, which is now underway in 4 additional forms of CKD. It's important for the reasons discussed to demonstrate that the profile is consistent with the pharmacology, at suppressing inflammation and showing a durable improvement, and is inconsistent with an adverse profile, which would be hyperfiltration.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt, I would just add one other point, too, that part of the reason that we have designed the PHOENIX trial to sample the 12-week data in the 4 additional major forms of rare CKD is that we have numerous long-term data sets showing that the 12-week acute GFR effect predicts the long-term effect. And, of course, it did here in these patients where we have 2-year data as well. And those will be readouts that will be, you know, upcoming starting in the second half of this year.
Great, thanks. That's helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you. And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. And our next question comes from the line of Ritu Baral from Cowen. Your line is now open.
Good morning, everyone. Have you looked at the EGFR effect across the different PAH subtypes in the patients in this analysis? I'm wondering if it gives us any additional insight into the biochemical mechanism as you guys understand it right now.
Sure. Great question, Ritu. And yes, we have. And so the two primary subtypes of PH that were studied in the Lariat trial are connective tissue disease and idiopathic. And we see similar increases from baseline across 16 weeks in those patient populations. The primary difference is the placebo patients. And so in the idiopathic patients, they're stable. But in the CTD patients, they actually had a few point loss of EGFR by week 16. And so that's, I think, consistent with the literature showing that the CTD patients have, you know, faster, you know, progression and higher mortality.
And by the way, Ritu, you may also be aware that, you know, roughly I think a third of the CTD PH patients have lupus, and of course that's associated, you know, well-established associations with declining kidney function. Lupus nephritis.
Got it.
Yeah.
And was there any correlation, or have you done a correlative analysis between improvements experienced in these patients in EGFR and what potential benefits in their exercise capacity were over the course of the study, either six-minute walk or other measures?
No, we haven't done those analyses.
No, but as we mentioned earlier, we have previously reported that there were mean six-minute walk distance improvements.
Got it. I'm just wondering if there's a rationale for a patient experiencing a benefit in one necessarily having a benefit in EGFR, or is there a potential for sort of a dichotomous response?
It's an interesting question. There's some really excellent recent papers taking data from the REVEAL registry that, you know, really showing a clear correlation between acute decline in GFR, you know, and events, hospitalization and mortality events in these patients.
Independent of six-minute walk distance.
Yeah, independent of it, or other factors.
I mean, hypothetically, we think the drug, you know, would affect, you know, multiple processes within the patient, and so we think the drug is likely affecting the patient's underlying disease, which would affect mitochondrial function and their ability to walk farther based upon muscle performance of the heart and skeletal muscle. Obviously, it would help the kidneys, potentially would affect remodeling of the pulmonary vasculature longer term. But as far as strict statistical correlations in this relatively small data set, it would probably be unclear. We probably need a much larger trial to show, you know, correlations.
Got it. Understood. And then just if you could talk about patient retention in Lariat as it stands, how many patients are continuing on the study at this, you know, exact point in time, and reasons for dropout, understanding it's a very, very long open-label extension study.
Yeah, and so we had you know, a pretty high retention rate through the 16-week placebo-controlled portion. We actually had a higher dropout rate in the placebo patients than in the drug-treated patients during the 16-week treatment period. And we've had about 75% of patients volunteer to participate in the longer-term extension trial. And so we've had good retention rate, and we've actually rolled those patients over into a broader expanded access program now. And so overall, I think once again, the safety information, as I stated previously, is demonstrated that there's no safety concerns from the protocol safety review committee.
When, what do you expect the final end to be once all patients progress through the end of the open label?
And so this is pretty close to the final end.
Got it. Okay. Thanks for taking the question.
Thank you. And that concludes our question and answer session for today. I would like to turn the call back over to Vinnie Jindal for closing remarks.
Thanks, Glenda, and thanks to everyone for participating in the call and for the questions. We're looking forward to updating you again soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. As a reminder, a downloadable PDF of today's presentation and on audio recording will be available shortly after this conference call on Reata's website at reatapharma.com in the Investor News section. This concludes the program, and you may now disconnect. Everyone have a great day.